Good morning. Deanna Durham, who is my wife and assistant professor in applied social sciences, had planned to introduce our speaker this morning, Isabel Castillo, but unfortunately she is home ill today, and she very much regrets not being able to be here. But I have the introduction that Deanna has written for Isabel, and so I want to read that. I have known Isabel for 8 years, and if you look at the slide, you can see some of her accomplishments. And I would like to share two brief stories of my experience with Isabel. She and I first met in a class called Community Learning and Hispanic Education in the fall of 2005. Part of the coursework was to visit local agencies involved with immigrants, especially those without documentation. We were scheduled to visit ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who had just opened a new unmarked office behind the Valley Mall. After class, Isabel came up to me and wondered aloud if she would be in any danger if she went along. My sense was that she was going along, but Isabel was just calculating her risk. This was the first time she had disclosed to me her status as an undocumented person, and was the beginning of my own understanding of the daily challenges undocumented young people experience, most of whom had no choice in coming to the U.S. I, Deanna, enjoyed many more discussions and conversations with Isabel throughout her years here at EMU. And then secondly, in July in 2010, I received a frantic phone call from several Dreamers who at the time were local high school students, who had gone with Isabel to Washington, D.C. to lobby for passage of the DREAM Act. They were more than worried. Isabel had been arrested for doing civil disobedience in Senator Harry Reid's office. They couldn't find out which police precinct was holding her. She had not told them she was planning to be arrested because she didn't want them to try to dissuade her. And they were so afraid that she was going to be deported. We definitely were relieved when she was released late the next day. Since graduation, Isabel has found many ways to use her social work degree, and we have said many times in the Applied Social Sciences Department how proud we are of her and her work locally and nationally. Through the years, I've come to especially appreciate Isabel's stubbornness, resilience, courage, absolute resolve that no person should be demonized, no matter their status, and her faithfulness in maintaining friendships and relationships. We are so pleased to have her here with us this morning. Particularly, I'll just note, as we begin a weekend and Monday as celebrations of Martin Luther King Day, would you please join me in welcoming Isabel back to EMU.
Good morning. Thank you so much for that kind introduction. And thank you for having me here. It's great to be back at EMU. So on this Martin Luther King weekend, I'd like to begin with a story, as he often liked to do. And that's my personal story. I am originally from Mexico, but my parents brought me here when I was only 6 years old. So I didn't really choose to be brought here. I just came along with mommy and daddy, right? And they brought my siblings and I here directly to Harrisonburg, Virginia. I started the first grade here in the public school system and finished elementary school, went on to middle school. And then it was during my high school years, specifically my senior year in high school, that I realized that I was different, quote unquote, right, than my peers. And this was specifically during my senior year when I heard a lot of my friends and my peers talking about going to college and where they were, where they got accepted, where they wanted to go. And I knew that I wanted to go to college. My parents always instilled in my siblings and I to value education. They worked in the poultry industry for many years, so they would always tell us, you don't want to have this type of work. It's hard work. You're getting up at 5 a.m. You're working with turkeys and blood and guts, and you don't want to do this. So just do well in school, become a professional. And I worked very hard in high school. I had a 4.0 GPA, so I went to go speak to my guidance counselor, and I said, I want to go to college, sign me up, right? But I don't think he had ever worked with anyone in my situation. I am undocumented. Some people refer us to illegals, but I really dislike that term. I don't think any human being is illegal. We are undocumented because we lack a piece of paper, but other than that, we're just like anyone else. So he just had no clue how to help me, and it was a very tough time for me because I was ready to go to college. And so after graduating, I couldn't go directly to college. I found a job as a waitress at a local restaurant, and I worked there for an entire year, 7 days a week from like 9 in the morning till 10 p.m. And so, it was really hard. Sometimes I would find myself crying in the restaurant and saying, like, why am I here? I want to go to college. I want to do something. Then finally, God heard my prayers, and I found out that a local university, a university like no other, accepted undocumented students. And so I was very happy and grateful that I was going to be able to go to college and fulfill one of my dreams, right? So I enrolled, and it was a great blessing, but at the same time, it was kind of a constant reminder, as Deanna mentioned, that, you know, I am undocumented. And I can give a few examples, and this was, you know, the famous cross culture, and just the idea of going to like the Middle East or visit Europe. It was very exciting, but I couldn't do it. I mean, I could have gone, but I would never be able to come back. So it was very tough. I also wanted to volunteer during my college years here at the Big Brothers Big Sisters program, but because I didn't have this famous 9-digit number, this Social Security number, I couldn't even do that because they needed a Social Security number to do a background check. So it was hard. And also, when I was in DC, I did the Washington Community Scholar Center, which is a great program, by the way. And we were gonna go on a trip as well. And it was a federal building where they needed to do a background check, and I didn't have my Social Security number. And so that was another time of my life that I, you know, disclosed my status to my professor and said, well, is this gonna be a problem? Somehow we worked it out and it was okay, but it was frightening to think, like, we're going to this place, I could be arrested. So it was great times at EMU, and I graduated in 3.5 years. And so after graduation, I was at another stage of my life, much like the one in high school. What do I do now? I have this degree that I want to use, that I want to contribute and give back to my community, but legally I cannot work. And so it was tough. And really, I had two choices. One, just wait idly for our immigration laws to change or some miracle to happen. Or two, as cliche as it might sound, be the change that I want to see, right? And so I decided option two. I decided to no longer be scared, to be undocumented and unafraid, and be at the forefront of this movement and be a vocal advocate for the DREAM Act. How many of you have heard about the DREAM Act? Whoa. It's surprising. I've been to some places where like just a couple of people raised their hands, so it's very, very great to see so many of you know about the DREAM Act. And for those who don't know or are not very familiar, the DREAM Act is a federal piece of legislation that was first introduced in 2001. So it's not very new. I mean, it's been in Congress for over 10 years now. And it would create a pathway to earn citizenship for individuals like myself. There are four basic requirements under the DREAM Act. One, you must have entered the U.S. before you were 16, have lived in the U.S. for at least 5 consecutive years at the time of the enactment of this bill, have good moral character, meaning no criminal record, and have graduated from a U.S. high school. And so if you meet these four basic requirements and the DREAM Act were to pass, you have to go to college for at least 2 years or serve in the military for 2 years. And once you fulfill that requirement under the last version, you have to wait under what's called conditional legal status for 10 years. So you wait for 10 years. Once those 10 years go by, you can then apply to get your green card. And then you have to be a green card holder for at least 5 years before you can apply to become a U.S. citizen. So under the DREAM Act, we're talking about a 15 to 20 year process before you can become a U.S. citizen. And a lot of times people don't understand this. And people think like, well, if we pass the DREAM Act, that's amnesty and everyone's gonna get, you know, citizenship. And that's not the case. You have to work hard. You have to prove yourself. You have to wait a long time. But it's an important piece of legislation. Every year, about 65,000 undocumented students graduate from a U.S. high school. And a lot of them are not as blessed and fortunate to go to college like I was. And about 2 million people would qualify under the DREAM Act if it were to pass. And so the last time that the DREAM Act was put up for a vote was in December of 2010. And that was before I got arrested. So I can talk a little bit about the arrest, because you might be wondering, well, you know, why did you guys do this? Like I said, the DREAM Act was first introduced in 2001, and we had been waiting for years. We had done A through Z. We lobbied our senators, called, signed petitions, sent letters, marches, rallies, everything you can think of, and nothing was working. So it was July. The legislative calendar was coming to an end. The DREAM Act was not in the calendar to be put up for a vote. So we decided to escalate our tactics. We said, well, we're going to go to Senator Reid, who's the majority leader, and ask him to put the DREAM Act up for a vote, and we're not going to leave until he does so. So we went to his office. It was around 3 p.m. That day, 21 individuals got arrested. Five of us were in Senator Reid's office. We went there. We staged a sit-in, and they were like, you have to go, and don't do this. You're going to get arrested. You could get deported. But we've been waiting for so long. And we actually shared our stories there and just said, you know, it's time to do this. And our parents sacrificed so much for this. Do you have children? And I think if I ask everyone here who has children, would you do anything for your kids? Everyone that we've asked, they said yes. And that's what our parents did. They sacrificed so much to bring us here to provide an education for us. And so now we just want to use it, right? And finally, 7 p.m. came along, and they're like, okay, you guys have to leave. We're going to close the office. And we're like, no, we're not going to leave. We're going to stay here until he puts the DREAM Act up for a vote. So Capitol Police came. They arrested us. But next day, Senator Reid announced that he was going to put the DREAM Act up for a vote. So I think it worked. And so I want to read a quote from Martin Luther King regarding civil disobedience and direct action and getting arrested. And he said, quote, ordinarily, a person leaving a courtroom with a conviction behind him would wear a somber face, but I left with a smile. I knew that I was a convicted criminal, but I was proud of my crime. And so I feel the same way, right? I feel we were convicted for trespassing, and but we felt like this was a victory. And, you know, like I said, there's 2 million individuals that it's not easy to come out and say I'm undocumented, and it's very risky. I mean, any of you all could grab your cell phones right now and call immigration and say, there's this girl named Isabel Castillo, and she's speaking in chapel, and she's illegal, and she's, you know, she's undocumented. But we feel that the more public you are about your status, at least for undocumented youth, the safer you are. And you might be wondering, well, no, you could get deported, right? But I always like to use this example. You have Juan and you have Maria. And Maria is very active in her community, and everyone knows her. She volunteers. She's just a great person all around. But Juan is very scared to talk about his undocumented status. And if they're both put in deportation proceedings, a lot of people are going to think, like, well, wait, we have to fight for Maria. This can't happen to her. You know, where do I sign? Who do I call? What do I do? And if you say, can you please help Juan, they're going to be like, well, who's Juan? I don't know this guy. I've never heard of him. And so that's why we feel like the more public you are, the safer you are. Because if anything were to happen to you, we know, you know, how to help you. You know where you are. We know your situation. But not only is the DREAM Act important to pass, right? There's about 11 million undocumented individuals in the country. And realistically, we cannot deport 11 million people. A lot of these people just came here for better economic opportunities. And so many times people of faith think, well, you know, that's very political. We don't want to get into politics. But immigration reform for me, it's not a political issue, but rather an issue of justice. And the gospel always reminds us, especially in Matthew 25, to welcome the stranger, and many other passages in the Bible, to love your neighbor. So you might be asking, well, what can I do? You know, how can I help? And there are very small steps that you can take to help, like start an on-campus group to raise awareness and support for immigrant rights, or even those established groups. What are you doing to raise awareness? What are you doing to help move forward with immigration reform and the passage of the DREAM Act? And I know a few years back, SGA had a letter drive, and we had like a printed letter where people just signed saying, I support the DREAM Act, and we send it to our senators. And you can sign a petition, make a call. A lot of times you might see petitions circulating on social media asking to help stop the deportation of somebody who was driving from work to their house and their taillight was out and they didn't have a driver's license. And just because of something minor like that, they are now in deportation proceedings, potentially being separated from their family and their children, many times their US citizen children. There's like 90,000 children in foster care because their parents have been deported and these children are U.S. citizens. So it's a real issue that we're talking about. And call your representatives and senators and say, you know, support immigration reform, support the DREAM Act. And so finally, I want to leave you with a question that even Martin Luther King said in his letter from Birmingham jail. It's paraphrased. So I ask you all, which side are you on? There is no neutral ground. Are you willing to speak out with me or silently join our oppressor? Thank you so much for listening. And that's all.
Thank you, Isabel. Would you pray with me now? God, we thank you that those without status, those who are nothing in the eyes of the world, we thank you that you have made them royal, gifted with rights, chosen as partners, midwives of justice, birthing new systems, lighting new lights. Spirit of energy and change, in whose power Jesus was anointed, to be the hope of the nations, be poured out also upon us, without reserve or distinction, that we may have the confidence and strength to plant your justice here on earth, that we might be bold and dream that your kingdom might come. Through Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.